Hello, and welcome to this video on demand. My name is Bobby Gosarkar, and I'm a marketing manager in Cisco's enterprise marketing organization. Today, we're going to talk about two overall trends that are shaping the IT industry. The first one is service-oriented architecture, or SOA. The second one being on-demand, or utility computing. Our focus today is specifically on the impact of one of these over the other. I'm very pleased to have three guests on our panel today. As I introduce them, I'll let them tell you a little bit about their focus and areas of responsibility. First, to my left, is Geeta Jurey, Vice President of IT Strategy Consulting in Cisco's Internet Business Solutions Group. Hi, Geeta.
Hi, Bobby. Thanks for having me here today. So within the Internet Business Solution Group, I look after advising our customers on their technology choices. Our mission is to try to accelerate their success in adopting technology. And one of the key areas that they're asking us about is SOA and SOI and infrastructure on demand, real time. Where does that go? And what do we need to do about it?
Great. Thanks for being here, Geeta. Next, we have two folks from Cisco's own IT organization. Brian Christensen, Director of Data Center Systems. Welcome, Brian.
Hi. Thanks for having me here, Bobby. I have the very fun and challenging job of running our internal data centers, and I've spent a lot of time working on optimizing those for the last few years.
Oh, fantastic. Great. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Thanks.
And finally, we have Hisham Tout, Application Integration Architect in the Internet Technology Group, also within Cisco's IT organization. Welcome, Hisham.
Thank you, Bobby, for having us. My area of focus is mostly on incursion adoption for IT development teams towards moving towards more of an SOA and application integration strategy within the enterprise itself.
Okay, great. Thanks for being here, Sean. Okay, so let's get started. Let me start with you, Geeta. There's a lot of talk these days around real-time infrastructure, on-demand computing, or service-oriented infrastructure, as well as service-oriented architecture. That's really on applications. Can you sort of briefly summarize for us what these things mean and what are folks talking about and why are people so excited about these new ways looking at IT?
Sure, Bobby. So within IT, we're seeing the advent of a new architecture that's happening. And we've seen mainframes to minis to client server to the web. The latest is SOA. And accompanying that is a wave in terms of how the infrastructure is evolving, the real-time infrastructure, on-demand computing. The challenge is that for large enterprises, about half of their spending is in the data center. And over the last couple of years, we've seen a proliferation of servers, disks, all kinds of assets that are being put into to use to these new applications. But the sad part is that, of course, the spending on data centers is growing between 6 to 7% per year. But the utilization and the complexity of managing that infrastructure is causing delays, cost explosion, and making it so that these businesses can't respond quickly enough.
So folks are spending more money, yet they still have issues in terms of providing that service quickly.
Sure, absolutely. And being able to respond quickly to business is important because of globalization, shorter product lifetimes. And one of the main challenges is that the time to make the infrastructure available becomes a real bottleneck in terms of making these new business capabilities available.
Okay, so let me step back for a second. Let's define infrastructure, I guess. We should have done that previously. So infrastructure, I would say, is processors or computers, storage, and the network that ties all these together. Is that accurate?
That's correct. So all of the devices that sit on the network, the servers, the disk, the PCs themselves, that we would characterize as infrastructure.
Okay.
And the evolution towards real-time, on-demand. A lot of these terms are essentially marketing slogans from some large companies like IBM, Gartner, and others. And what we're seeing is that the infrastructure is becoming virtualized. The example being that in large enterprises, you find thousands of servers, but their utilization can be low. Typically for Intel, Windows-type servers, utilization doesn't get any higher than essentially 5 to 10%.
Really? Wow.
So you have all these assets that are there. They're complex, they're costly to manage. About 70% of IT spending today is on running that infrastructure as opposed to buying more applications and more hardware.
Okay.
So that's become a real problem.
Okay. So this is on the infrastructure side. This is what real-time infrastructure, on-demand computing is about.
Correct.
Okay.
So what's happening to try and fix that, to get the complexity under control, to make the provisioning of infrastructure more rapid, and also to increase resiliency and security, people want to try and take a service orientation to infrastructure, make the infrastructure be something that you can dial up or dial down as you need it.
Okay.
And we're calling that service-oriented infrastructure, or SOI.
I see. Okay.
So on the other hand, to go with that, companies are also changing their applications. And that's often referred to as SOA, service-oriented applications, or service architectures, where that's actually focused on the application transformation. And what we're seeing is people moving away from these large monolithic systems, the ERPs, supply chain management systems, and recognizing that in today's world, to respond more quickly, they need to focus on integrating those systems within the company, but also to our partners, our suppliers, our vendors. And to do that, you need to unravel these large applications by weaving them out as web services. You're exposing individual transactions as web services, and that's the transformation that's occurring with SOA. And what we're finding is companies are trying to do both SOA and SOI. Some companies are doing SOI who haven't yet started down the path of SOA because there's some real benefits to doing SOI in either case.
Okay, let me see if I can summarize what you said. So with the infrastructure side, there's low utilization. People want to drive higher utilization, and they also want to be able to provide those services on those infrastructure quicker.
Correct.
So in order to do that, on-demand computing and real-time infrastructure and service-oriented infrastructures are approaches to making that happen.
Right. So we call that whole area service-oriented infrastructure.
I see.
And some companies have chosen to name architectures or marketing campaigns like on-demand and real-time infrastructure, but they're essentially building on a notion of what we refer to generically as service-oriented infrastructure.
I see. And then in parallel, on the application side, there's decoupling of the application, and the purpose of doing that is so that you can respond faster to whatever business needs there might be and assemble applications faster.
That's exactly right.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. I think I have a good appreciation of that. Okay. Now, let me turn to Brian and Hisham and talk to them about what Cisco IT is doing internally on both SOI and SOA. So, Brian, tell me, I think I understand now from talking to Guido about service-oriented infrastructure. What are you and the rest of Cisco's IT organization doing with regards to the infrastructure and how you may have looked at it in the past and how you're looking at it differently going forward?
Right. Well, at Cisco, I think we had a lot of the common problems that Guido just described. In the sort of the late 90s, early 2000s, within Cisco, we put everything on the web. It's on the web was a sort of a common slogan. Well, what did that yield? It yielded sort of a proliferation of servers, a proliferation of storage and so forth, and really a siloed approach to how we did architectures within the data center. With that, we determined internally we really needed to take a new approach to how we were managing the data center to both, you know, increase availability and reliability to try to drive some of that people cost out of our environment and to try to drive down some of the actual capital expenditures and so forth we were making by driving utilization up and efficiencies up on both sides. So with that, we created a Cisco IT program called Service-Oriented Data Center, how we were really going to drive utility computing within our data center into our clients.
I see.
And to drive that, to me, it wasn't just about, you know, buying a piece of technology. You weren't going to buy a new server, a new piece of storage, a new piece of networking infrastructure from Cisco, and let alone that would just provide that. How we were going to drive that was sort of with a three-phased approach. First, we were going to drive it through people. And one of the most challenging aspects is the people and the organizational challenges to do this. We reorganized our team in a services approach, a networking team for the data center, a server team, a storage team, and a services layer team for what we were driving.
So you have more cross-pollination between your teams.
Exactly,
okay.
Exactly. Not a siloed team, not a team for one business function.
Okay.
Exactly. We were going to drive that through processes. How we used to pay for our infrastructure is individual groups paid for individual servers, individual pieces of storage.
And sure, I've heard of that, the client-funded model of IT, which has been prevalent across most enterprises.
Exactly. And we had to change the model for both the software we had and the mechanisms to pay for that infrastructure on a service, not on an individual piece of infrastructure. And lastly, based on technology and a standardized infrastructure technology, leveraging standard architectures, from our different suppliers, and by focusing on processes, focusing on technology, focusing on people, we really have driven a lot of success driving a service-oriented architecture within our data center.
Within your infrastructure.
Exactly.
Yeah. So can you give me an example? I mean, you know, maybe you can give me an example from your the way that you might look at servers today or storage today that's different than the way it used to be.
Well, given the old world, you know, real-life example I was living with is we needed to upgrade our ERP systems or any individual system. And how we used to have to provision storage, it used to have to be, you know, we'd have to get the storage from a vendor, get that installed, get it hooked up into the network, provision to the host, et cetera. That could take 30, 60, 90 days.
Sure.
With that, what we've been able to do is hook up every host in our data center to every piece of storage, virtualize that across, and actually expand that between data centers. Now we're able to provision storage in under one day.
Wow.
As compared to, I know, it's amazing, right? I mean, just thinking of the pains we used to have to do a few years ago. And hence, we don't have a waste. Something I describe of a sort of a process we had internally, if an application group used to request storage, they used to always say, they say they needed 20 gig of storage. They'd ask for 40 gig of storage because, you know, you don't want to ask for
sure.
for what you actually need, right? They go to the database administrators, want 80 gig, go to the system administrators, go to the storage guys, and then they end up provisioning 500 gig because they don't want to go back and do it a week later, a month later, and so forth.
Because everyone wants the room to grow.
Exactly.
Right.
They don't want to go back and ask for more and go through that whole process again. Well, by making it more of a service-oriented approach and having a lot more agility and virtualization, we've been able to, you know, reduce the hogging. And what we've seen over the last 3 years is we used to have roughly about 35% utilization of our storage actually by our end applications. Now we've been able to drive that to almost 70%, which
wow.
has had a really positive ROI as far as investments we've made with storage virtualization technology within our data center.
Okay, great. That's a good example, I think I can appreciate the service-oriented infrastructure a little bit better hearing about some examples from you. Now, let me turn to Hisham and talk to Hisham about what we're doing internally within Cisco IT from an application point of view. So, Hisham, tell me, is Cisco IT taking a service-oriented architecture approach to applications? And if we are, what are some of the reasons behind doing that?
We certainly have. In fact, the drive to move towards a service-oriented architecture and implement a lot of web service and expose a lot of business functionality, as Guido has elaborated, breaking down these very large monolithic applications, whether they're actual packages or they're actual custom application, where all the GUI and the actual business logic is all combined into one. Our ability to drive towards that direction has given us a lot of return on the investment from that perspective. It has helped us abstract these services and extract the services from the application so we can allow these services to be shared across many of the applications, not within a specific organization only, but across multiple organizations within Cisco itself. That's one of the main initiatives that we've had over the past few years. And it has, you know, again, it has provided us with significant return on our investment. One of the biggest challenges we faced several years ago, and I believe Brian touched base on that, is the whole proliferation of these monolithic giant applications that are extremely, you know, disparate, siloed application for specific functionality, where a lot of the data was being replicated across many different databases with issues related to discrepancy because of replication of the data and the asynchronous nature of replicating the data. In addition to that, a lot of replication of the same business logic across multiple applications, which actually in itself did not turn out to be the same.
So you're saying this is wasteful?
It's wasteful. It is wasteful. Inconsistency. It provided complete inconsistency of the business logic and the data itself. So if you're looking at one report based on a specific application, you may see different data by another application, even though they're reporting exactly the same, you know, basically providing the same invoice or anything of this nature. And these are some of the problems that we run into. In addition, the utilization was extremely low again. Anytime any application grew, the number of users or concurrent or simultaneous users grew to it, it was a matter of actually going in and acquiring new servers that took significant amount of time to acquire.
Sure.
And then to configure and add to the actual application. Yet the utilization overall of these specific servers, while certain applications were boxed into a small resources that were not sufficient for that application, other environments had too much waste and significant, you know, in certain ways, significant overhead when it comes to CPU memory and disk storage.
Hisham, can you give me an example, so I can understand this a little bit better? So an example of an application or maybe an application process that previously had been monolithic, but now you all are looking at doing a more services-oriented approach to that application.
Absolutely. One of actually the prime examples that we implemented a couple of years ago was order status, which is providing the status of that specific order back to the clients themselves. We had 17 different order statuses that were implemented in different applications across the organization, whether it's within CA or any other organization. They tapped into their own databases, and of course, there was lack of synchronization across the data. Even the logic for providing the status back to the actual client differed between the different applications. So it was complete inconsistency, and it was very difficult for us to maintain many of these implementations.
I see.
The move that we've done was to actually extract much of that business functionality and provide it into a shared service that tapped into a centralized or into a centralized repository for those specific records as far as the order status is concerned.
Okay, that's great. That's a good example. I understand. So sharing the data and sharing the access to that data was really a key driver of taking a more services-oriented approach.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thanks. So, Guido, you know, I think the question that a lot of people might be asking is, this is great information. A lot of us are going through that exact same process. But why Cisco? Why is Cisco talking about these things? What's Cisco's value that Cisco can add in these discussions, in the understanding of the IT strategy?
So a lot of our customers have asked us, what is the architecture? How do I fit this together? How do I ensure that the infrastructure is agile, resilient, secure, to respond to these application needs? And what Cisco's done is we've created an architecture that we call SONA, Service-Oriented Network Architecture.
I see.
And what SONA is essentially it's a combination of Cisco's approach to SOI, which is a network-centric approach. And we believe that if you have a choice and you can virtualize or embed your services in the network layer, that's the most effective place to put it, because the network is the connection between all of the devices that you have in your infrastructure, whether it's your PCs, your PDAs, your servers, your disk. They all flow and connect through the network. And a service that's available in the network is then available to everything that sits on the network.
So give me an example of what do you mean by service. I mean, certainly, you know, disks or storage devices or CPUs, I mean, these are the things that I think of when I think of infrastructure.
Right.
Those are not network things, and you can't provide a CPU on a network.
Well, what we can actually do is expose some of those infrastructure resources, like you mentioned, disk or servers. Increasingly, we're going to make those available as services. So the infrastructure is becoming programmable.
I see.
You're going to be able to have the applications express what they need, or the system administrators reconfigure the infrastructure pretty much through using these service interfaces.
I see.
I need more CPU. I need more disk. I can turn a dial, so to speak, and make more of the resources available. And we're implementing that within Cisco, within SONA, as part of our enterprise architecture, which leverages SOI, as well as some of our collaboration applications. SONA includes all of SOI interpreted as we do in a network way, but also adds some of our collaboration applications, such as telephony and web conferencing, that benefit from that programmation interface, the ability to program and make the resources available through what we call the interactive services layer.
Okay, so what Cisco is doing with SONA, if I understand you correctly, is impacting both the infrastructure and the applications. So both the infrastructure that's being more service-oriented and the application that's also being more service-oriented, which is more around making the components looser and so on and so forth.
Exactly, because as the infrastructure is used well, as its utilization goes up and it provides the security and resiliency you need, what the infrastructure is also starting to do in our SONA model is really support the applications with some of the routine activities that currently are being done by applications or by middleware, perhaps some features like encryption or parsing XML messages. And those activities, as they become more and more well understood and increasingly relied upon, we want the infrastructure, specifically in our case, the network, to provide that as a service. So the applications can really focus on their core competency, which is the business logic, the end user functionality.
Sure.
And that we have a certainty that all the security angles are all being covered in a central and well-defined way.
Sure. I guess that makes a lot of sense. You know, if a server is out there doing some sort of computing, we ought to let that server do its computing.
Exactly.
Right? And there are some things that the network can provide more quickly in a more repeatable fashion and so on.
Exactly. I mean, a simple example is imagine in a world where every application, increasingly as we're interfacing applications to other applications that may be with our suppliers or partners, imagine if every application had to learn how to do encryption.
Right.
I mean, all of us probably enjoy using broadband, VPN connections at home. Once you make your connection secure, all the applications that flow through it are secured.
Sure, sure. Okay, great. Let me turn to Brian and Hisham and ask what you internally within an IT organization are doing in terms of the Cisco service-oriented network architecture approach. Does that resonate with you? And what do you think about that vis-a-vis the rest of the infrastructure?
Right. Well, naturally, a service-oriented approach aligns to the work we're doing. And I mean, I'm personally excited that we're going to be able to get more of this technology integrated. And my real vision of the data center is get it more automated, right? So I can deliver an in-service, full infrastructure service, fully automated across the board. So within the SONA, within the data center, there's sort of two major areas we're focusing on. One is actual data center services that we're providing from a core data center. How are we virtualizing storage? How are we virtualizing servers? And how are we automating delivery of those servers? And how are we leveraging SONA to accomplish this from that space? The other area is we're within our data centers, we've been consolidating all our data centers and wanting to deliver more end-user services from those data centers, where traditionally we have voicemail applications, collaboration applications, email applications, et cetera. We're consolidating those down to a very limited number of data centers. In our case, primarily one per theater, one for Asia, one for the U.S., one for Europe, and then delivering all these collaborative telephony, et cetera, all via one centralized place. That way, the services that our clients get within Cisco can be exactly the same, irregardless of where they are in the world, and not based on what
Sure.
device do they have within their local office, et cetera. Well, this is definitely increasing the level of services we have and lowering our overall costs to support those services going forward.
Great. So then as a infrastructure manager of an IT organization, you definitely find a lot of value in the service-oriented network approach to looking at the data center.
Definitely. We definitely have seen a very positive total cost of ownership within our own infrastructure just from basic things like move add changes.
Okay.
You know, we have a lot of those, and that's one of our major costs of supporting it. Taking a service-oriented approach is dramatically lowering our operational expenses to doing things like that.
Okay, great. Now, Hisham, how about you? You're looking at this obviously from a different perspective as an application architect. You're probably not dealing with Cisco's technologies as much as Brian is. Mm-hmm. But what's your viewpoint? Does the service-oriented network architecture have relevancy for you when you're looking at service-oriented architectures for applications?
It certainly has. It has a significant impact to our push moving forward with SOA. Basically, one of the most important aspects is the ability to dynamically provision these specific services and application across the data center while abstracting it from the actual hardware that provides it these specific resources. Our ability to create shared resources or shared services across the enterprise that may require more or in certain ways a dynamic approach to require more resources, whether it's CPU resources, memory resources, or disk space resources, is critical to us. While we were successful in moving towards the SOA, we still encountered the challenges of having to add individual servers to scale, to horizontally scale, or even vertically scale these specific services as more applications demanded these specific services. In the case of using, you know, going towards SONA, we're now able to dynamically provision and acquire these specific resources without the long wait or the delay that has to be that may impact the service itself, or in turn, consequently, impact the actual application itself, which has to wait to get on board or to make use of that specific service. And sometimes that delay could be in terms of months versus be in terms of minutes or you know, half an hour maximum in order to basically provision these specific resources to it. That's the positive impact that you see. And that's really significant because remember in the case of individual applications or siloed application, the way they scale is very predictable. However, when you create a shared service, the number of applications that may come on board is not something that you can plan for as easily as when you're dealing with a siloed individual application.
That's
so your ability to respond, the agility, the responsiveness to the business requirements become ever more critical as you move forward.
And just in response to Hisham, the ability to provide security services, application optimization services, when we provide these services out of the U.S., we want to use them around the world.
Sure.
So we're trying to leverage some of the SONA services to optimize those applications, to secure those applications, irregardless of where the person using that application is.
Where the user might be.
Absolutely. Okay. The piece that actually moves even closer to the whole this whole geography aspect of it, and that's where dynamic provisioning comes into place. As you move more towards shared services, while disparate and siloed applications have many, many problems associated with them, and replication of data across also has a lot of problems, it has provided a little bit of comfort as if you are creating an application in EMEA or in Asia Pac or in some other theaters that may be far away and you had to use the WAN, you could just connect to the local data store. As you start moving more towards shared services or shared data stores, that becomes more challenging. So our ability to dynamically provision as quickly as possible these specific services or hardware or back-end data store becomes even more critical as you move geographically across theaters too.
I see. Great. Thank you both for that example. It makes a lot of sense. So Guido, I think we've heard a lot of good information today. If I could recap, so we heard about service-oriented infrastructures, service-oriented architectures. We heard about what Cisco is doing in specifically the service-oriented network architecture that contributes to both of these. And we heard some great examples from Brian and Hisham and how this is actually being thought about and used and planned in a large IT organization. But I'm sure that the folks listening are going to want to dive a little deeper and look at some more case studies or look at some more concepts. So is there anything that they can go to, any resources out there on the web?
Yes, absolutely, Bobby. So in terms of understanding SOA and SOI a bit further, we have a white paper, and that's available on our website, www.cisco.com/go/datacenter.
Okay.
And in terms of understanding SONA, which is our Cisco's response to a service-oriented infrastructure approach for the network, we have that also on our website, www.cisco.com/go/SONA.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Okay, so that completes our video today. Thank you very much for joining us and listening to this VOD. Please email us your comments and questions at dcpodcast@cisco.com. We really value your comments and would like to hear the topics that you're most interested in and what's valuable to you. So thank you again, and we'll see you next time on the Cisco Video Podcast.